guys, welcome back to
Melanin Speaking.
Ooh, I fucking love it.
Today we are having an awesome episode, and we have two of our, I guess, favorite human beings so far.
Oh, back. Wow. We're putting that on them.
Oh, we're putting the pressure on them, aren't we? At least over here in Scotland, we can tolerate them for a certain amount of time, right?
I mean, yeah. I see you guys, I see you too.
All the time. We see them all the time. But we're super excited to have them on an episode. Yeah. We're going to let them introduce themselves, starting with Lewis.
Hi. I'm Lewis. Pronounce he, him. I'm from Scotland, actually really near to here in the university. I guess I'm part of Global Justice Now, and I'll let Ludo tell you a bit about that.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having us. I'm Ludo, pronouns he, him. I'm from Italy, and I'm a third-year international politics student, and I am also part of Global Justice Now.
Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. So, like, what part of Scotland are we from, Lewis?
Creef.
Oh, you're from Creef?
Yeah.
I did not know that. I thought you just really liked going there.
No, it's this, like, super small town, like, right on the edge of, like, the Central Belt going into the Highlands. It's, like, this weird town that's, like, the top of the town is, like, Tory central, and then you go to the other side of the town, and, well, it's not.
It's like, okay. Like, what is that far from Stirling?
Like, half an hour. Half an hour
by bus?
By car.
Oh, okay. So more with bus because of all the stops that they go.
Yeah.
That's fine. And what part of Italy are you from?
I'm from Genova in the north.
Okay.
I historically renowned to be a quite leftist city in Italy. We have quite a good history of political resistance. So for those interested, go and check it out.
I think people are more interested in, like, the wine and pasta. That's what my sister told me the other day. She was like, I want to go to Italy. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to try every wine they have. I said, okay, that's a lot. That's a fucking joke. But I'm super excited for today's episode. We are going to be talking about activism here in Scotland. I feel like we've been working on that since we've got to Scotland ourselves. You know, I think it definitely started when we met you guys at the Stirling Climate Festival. And then we were like, oh, okay, what is this? And then we met you guys, and then we met the Society Club at Stirling, which is Global Justice Stirling. And then we just been at it day and night. I have nightmares on it, to be honest. I'm like, because I'll wake up like, damn, I missed the meeting. I'll be like, wait, what's today? Like, I think, yeah.
Literally this past week, that was me on my calendar. Yeah. I was like, there's something here. Just educational. And I was like, guys, I don't remember what I put down.
But I think what we would like to start with, just asking everyone, is like, how did you get into activism? You know, like, what made you say, let's do this?
I don't know, I guess for me, it was like kind of a natural progression. Like when I was younger, I was like always taken into the hills, into the wilds of Scotland by my parents, spent a lot of time out there, and like watching nature documentaries, things like David Attenborough stuff, and sort of like a natural progression with like the whole, climate crisis. Mm-hmm. And like seeing all, originally it was like, oh, these things are gonna be, we might not get to see them when we're older, or our kids not might get to see this, and then from there, like realizing that it's not just about that, and it, like it's a lot broader. It covers climate justice, it covers racial justice, like indigenous and the rights, gender equality, all these sorts of things, which are like part and parcel of that fight. And I think it was like realizing how like big and complex it was, that kind of pushed me into thinking, okay, well, I have to do something about it. It took me a while to get to the stage where I knew what I wanted to do about it. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time reading, or like telling myself at least I had to read things, buying loads of books and reading probably only about 10% of them. And yeah, listening to podcasts and that sort of thing. And then I went to uni and was really quite surprised by how little was going on at the university when I came. I'd always been told that uni is like a, you know, it's like melting pot, it's like really political, mm-hmm. and I turn up and...
It marketizes itself well.
Yeah. And there was like almost nothing. I mean, maybe I just didn't put myself out there enough. But yeah, so that for me, it was kind of a bit of a shock. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like then COVID hit. and I suddenly had loads of time on my hands. And thought, well, I might as well do something with this time. So I tried at one point to set up a movement. Parentheses. on my own. I think the idea was kind of good. But yeah, it was very naive of me to think that I could do something like that on my own, without any experience.
And but, I mean, at least you did it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't. It didn't happen. Oh. So. It fell apart.
It's the thought that count.
And then I could, then COVID sort of ended. Could come back to university. Actually it was Ludo and some others who I'd been in the same stairwell with in our university halls had set up Global Justice Now. And, yeah. Joined in with that. Global Justice Sterling. Joined in with that, and then progressed from there. We just thought, okay, we've got a group now. We can maybe do some small actions. It started off with we'll organize a climate strike or like educationals and stuff like that. And it's kind of snowballed since then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what about you, Ludo?
Yeah, I actually wanted to comment on what Lewis was saying. I found quite interesting how he got to uni and thought that it was very inactive and, then joined Global Justice Sterling, which in this podcast, I'm just going to say GJS, which we usually call because it's way too long. For me, it was kind of the opposite. So I came from a rural town in Italy. And for me, being active was somewhat a gradual process, like the one Lewis undertook. But it was more like my parents showing me models or watching the news constantly or watching movies or suggesting books, stuff like that, that at the time I wasn't really interested in. I just wanted to play video games and go out and play football with my friends and ride a bike and do all the things that kids like to do. Growing up, you realize that actually that they were all seeds that they were planting in my life. And it turns out most of the movies that I saw completely passively when I was 10 turns out to be some of my favorite movies, such as Motorcycle Diaries or Gran Torino or just general movies that though have somewhat of a morale in the ending. For me, it was quite different. I got to the University of Stirling and I thought, man, this is a place that is active. There was different political groups and a lot of socialists and Red Labour and Scottish Socialist Youth or Scottish Socialist Party. And I was just I want to get part of this movement. It just seems so cool. Everyone seems so nice. And it's just being leftist is taken for granted, which in Italy was not the case at all. And I was I want to create my own thing and be part of this movement and help them out and network and collaborate. And that's how Global Justice Sterling was born, basically. And funny enough, I was actually looking up at people like Lewis that I thought were already super super involved and knew already like the climate crisis so well, whereas I was coming from a quite different perspective. I was coming more from like maybe social issues in Italy. Like migration is a huge issue which I had to face very early on in my life, and in general it was more like a repulse towards anything that was unjust. And then it built onto an understanding and identifying each issue of the struggle, such as the climate crisis and many others.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely agree on like the parents showing me things as I was growing up. My mom used to just show me the news all the time. But like as a kid, I was like, Mom, I don't want to see this. Like, I don't really care. But like as I grown up now and I'm like, dang, that was pretty intense. Another thing is, like, I didn't really get into activism until, I want to say, 2019, during, like, the Black Lives Matter movement in America. I didn't really have a motivation beforehand, but I knew Nat, we've been friends for so long, and she's always just been, like, the active one, and knew more individuals in that, like, political community setting. So just one day I just went around with her and handed out like leaflets, what we call them. And just, I don't know, the reactions of like the people that I was giving it to, just seeing how they were for it or not was for it. And then like listening to their reasons. And I was like, that's interesting. And so I wanted to continue on, but I didn't know how can I get this information. You know, I was like, I still feel oblivious to everything. So when I came here, and we met you guys, and then you guys are just, for me, throwing all these words, and I'm like, I'm like on my phone Googling, like, what the fuck did they just say? But at the same time, I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. And then, like, when COP26 came, and I was so close to something so big for me, I was like, oh, this is a nice movement. And then getting the opportunity to listen to all those people, indigenous people, and tell their stories, I was just like, we gotta do something, you know? And so I just wanted to continue on with, like, making an impact however I can. But I just felt like back then I didn't know how to unless I had someone. So I think, like, great resources is just, like, knowing. Mm-hmm. And you said, like, podcasts. Like, I don't think I've ever heard a activists.
I tell you all the time. Pod Save America.
Oh, yeah. Pod Save America. You even had a shirt that said it. And now you still have that shirt.
My boss got it for me.
I
would play it, which I don't think was right. But anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, we had books out there. And it's just like, if the cover, for me, I'm more intrigued by like the design or something. Or like how they can catch my attention. So like if it didn't book-wise, I'm just like, oh, okay. But campaign-wise or... I'm really loving campaigns and how people are like designing them. Like, Louis, I love your campaign little designs that you make. I'm like, because when I make stuff on Canva, I'm like, damn, what? Maybe I should give it to Louis. But I know you have like 1,000 things on your plate, but I would, I don't know. But what about you?
I was going to say, I think it's just interesting how like each of you came from a different perspective, right? So Ludo came at it from, I think, more of like an organizational social justice manner. And you came at it from like, I have to educate myself in order to get like activated or whatever. So you came at it from that kind of aspect. And I think that was interesting how Ludo pointed out that he looked up to you because of that, because he felt like he didn't know enough and you knew so much. And I feel like that's how these activist groups kind of work. Like, people come in and they all have like different skills and different knowledge,
yeah,
different outlooks and everything. And I feel like that's probably the best part about activism once you get in it. Because I mean, even like when we were handing out leaflets, now those were for specific like candidates that were running for office. But even just hearing people's like concerns, I think is such a great part of it. Because it's like, I think we get in our own heads and we're like,
we only have that one perspective.
We have that one perspective, but I feel like the more you read, the more you have the perspective of, like, just elites, kind of, whoever is the kind of writing and stuff on this. And I feel like you kind of lose that perspective of, like, the average person that has the impact to change these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I always really liked working on campaigns. And that's why I was really happy that you decided to come. Because, like, once you just start talking to people, you realize that, like, generally everybody can agree on these things. And like,
it's just the energy. If, like, knocking on their door, you know, and those who did answer or come out or even take the leaflet, they'll have that time to talk to to you about how they're feeling, and you're just like, I did not know that you're going through that, or, you know, I didn't know that you felt this way about this candidate or what's going on. So I definitely agree that, like, it was just the energy caught me into it, and I just wanted more, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I love it.
I guess that kind of maybe brings in a little bit of, like, I know people's difficulty of, yeah, getting involved in activism, like the sort of like barriers that they might feel to getting involved there. Like you were saying there, how like it's great when you can like go there and talk to someone, and then, you know, like you often find that you're like, you agree, or you have like ideas in common.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that was a big thing for me. Like, the reason I did all this reading was because I like felt like I needed to know everything before I got started. But in the end, it was just a case of, I know, speaking to people and doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that sometimes comes up, is like, oh, if I can't do everything all at once, like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And you get kind of like scared to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, if you're with other people, and there's like an open space that like allows you to like sort of segue into activism slowly, like, yeah, just being around other people that kind of takes the edge off that.
Mm. And I feel like you feed into each other's energies as well, like when you're all in that space, because there's times where I'm like reading something and I don't necessarily feel super excited about it, but then like I'll go to like GJS or I'll start a conversation with any of you, and it, for me, it like elevates that kind of, for me, like the movement that I want to do towards it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I feel you so much on that, especially because like I feel that when you're surrounding, you read the news, something exciting, something that has happened, or even something that bad that has happened, and you talk to someone and you just bring it up, and that person does not relate or resonate with anything that you're saying, it does not matter to them. You kind of feel like, oh, maybe I'm missing something out here, like, you know, whereas instead, if you bring that something, you bring something up at a meeting or like with the group, with people that are part of the group in GJS, it's more like, oh, this is cool, you know, you feel what I'm saying, and there is that sort of like compassion, you know, like we're caring together, and this, and it's very cool that, you know what I'm talking about, and I know what you were talking about. And I think that is one of the biggest problems we've got in society, kind of like trying to understand each other's perspective and communicate. And as much as you would feel like, you know, reading an article, that person next to you doesn't understand what you're talking, then you just drop it. That is kind of the wrong approach to go about it. Mm-hmm. You should just be like, oh, you know, actually this shit matters, and it does impact you, and, you know, you should care. And that is why, you know, I think friends are so important in the movement as well. GJS started as a group of friends because friends can just relate easier. You know, you're like-minded people, you care about similar stuff. Obviously, everyone's got their different backgrounds, different ideas, different perspectives. And so it's very cool because that just makes it like a melting pot, like Lewis was saying before. And it just allows you to have like a wider perspective, like a holistic view of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why I get frustrated when people tell me, well, I don't know anything about it, I don't know politics, I don't know this, I'm not going to get involved, I'd rather just, you know, do something else that I'm good at. And I understand that, and I think it's very human. But at the same way, what most people need to understand is that you just don't learn everything one day from another. You can't read 200 books in a year. It just doesn't work that way. So you slowly, gradually build towards that. If you're interested, that's everything you need to be. Then the knowledge will come from that. But, you know, if you can't be bothered to read a book that day, which you think is very important to do, and I feel the same as Lewis, I have like 20 books I need to read and like 100 in my library. But go out in a protest, join a protest, join a group, and start talking to them. Like you guys were saying, talking to people is like the best way to learn and get knowledge and see how people feel about something. And, you know, you'll probably meet a lot of people that know more than you, a lot of people that know less, and they'll probably be able to give you an input in both ways.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think, yeah, like, activism is, like, just as much about, like, community and the people that you spend the time with as your end goals. And I think, I mean, they're inextricably linked. And you kind of like touched there a little bit on sort of, the need to be able to understand everything. But like, if we compare it to like academia or something like that, like a professor of, I don't know, whatever, you know, they might spend their whole lives like researching, becoming the expert in this tiny aspect of like a massive field.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, like similar to, I don't know, someone from outside trying to understand the perspective of someone from an indigenous tribe in the Amazon. Like you can't.
Yeah.
Because they spend their whole lives experiencing that. Like the best you can do is to empathize. Mm-hmm. And like show support for the things they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And
just listen to their stories, because that's, I feel like, was super important, especially at COP26.
Mm-hmm.
Like people were there to express how they were feeling. They were given a platform for people to understand, like, this is not okay. Like, here, I'm here, we're humans as well, but we're losing homes, and it just seems like no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to, like, go back to what you were saying, Ludo, on, like, people not caring in the forms of, like, what or anything to do with activism. Like, you know, you want them to go out or, like, read a book and stuff like that, but, like, isn't there, like, different times or different forms of, like, activism? You know, those who don't necessarily have to be out at the front line, but more of, like, the support of, like, maybe donating or just, you know, sharing, liking a post. I think there's there's this weird, not feeling, but, like, stereotype when it comes to when you say, oh, I'm an activist. And immediately you think, oh, you're a person who's out there, you know, raising the placards, throwing the banners, or making a riot if you're in America or whatnot. But, yeah, start a riot. But I just feel like you can be an activist and not be on the front line.
I feel like it was important that you said that, like, because, I mean, that's the thing is, like, when we think about activism, we think about, like, two polar opposites, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're either the extremist that's, like, lying in the road trying to get arrested,
yeah,
action, right?
Yeah.
Or you're on the other side and you're on Instagram just sharing stories and that's, like, your thing. Like, right, you're just liking, sharing, and maybe not even donating. But, like,
are
you
going to
share?
Depends on who you are.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I think, I don't know, I feel like now that's the conversation. And I also feel like, and this can be controversial, that the two, like, if you do identify yourself as being more towards one specific side versus the other, then you get into that controversy, right? So, like, if I'm somebody that does a lot of direct actions, I'm not going to necessarily agree with somebody that just shares it on social media, because I'm like, what are you doing that for?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you doing it for? Is it for yourself to make yourself look good? Because we're not out here.
But that could be said for the same thing. Mm-hmm. That could be said for vice versa.
Exactly.
You know, because you're putting out your campaign on social media. You're taking the time to create these things.
Mm.
So I'm doing my part. Let's just say I'm the clickbait person. I'm going to like, share, and maybe comment on it. So, like, why wouldn't I be an activist on that?
Yeah. So my perspective, I think everything that you guys said is true and important. I think it's just a matter of, like, different stages. As we were talking about before, it's like a gradual process you work towards. It's not something you were born with. It's not something you become from the day from another. Oh, you vote tomorrow, you vote left, oh, you become a comrade for the rest of their life. No, that's not how it works. And if someone tells you, I've always been a comrade, they probably are not a comrade. In the sense that it's an evolving process, and you change your mind. Like, human beings evolve all times, and you can change your mind, and that's good. And that's what keeps us critical. And going back to what you were saying about stories, I think what one and probably the only success out of COP was that of amplifying stories, the stories that need to be heard. And I think that it's very good because stories are a vessel for people to understand a much broader concept in a tiny story that might look dull and uninteresting, but actually in its core has a huge morale. And those stories need to be heard, and And those are the story that then we need to be telling about this activist, these people in the front line. They're exactly the same people as anyone else in society. They are doctors, they are teachers, they are students, they are retired, they're white, black, brown. Indigenous stories needs to be heard, and that activism is just a stage in your life. So whether you're a clicktivist at the moment, which we've all been through, in the sense that when I was younger, I had that phase, and that phase does not need to be mocked, because it helps a lot of other people to just be a little bit more awake. So if you share a story and then a friend of yours that is not political at all reads it and resonates with that, they're like, okay, cool. Okay, I'm going to follow this page. And then they're going to keep reading and getting knowledge. And then it's going to just spread and get more. And then next thing you know, you're a full-on activist in the front line. But it doesn't go from one end to another in like a matter of days or months. It takes time. It takes years. And don't rush it. There is nothing. You've got your whole life to develop a political conscience. So just start caring. That's my main advice. Start caring, and it slowly will build up in you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd agree with most of what you said. I guess it's like, again, like so cheesy, but like it's another one of these things, like almost everything is a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't necessarily have to like progress from one end to the other end of the spectrum. Like, you can also, like, one day you can be doing direct action, but then like you maybe have less capacity mentally or like time-wise to do direct action, which, I mean, you know, like, is on the parenthesis extremist end of being an activist.
And then terrorists.
And then, yeah, you maybe only have time to go share something on social media. Yeah. I mean, there's everything in between, like organizing like mutual aid in your community, or like educationals, all these sorts of things, which are like just as important. Mm-hmm. Just as a quick example, for like in the UK now, we're going through a period where there's what, 7 or 8 like horrific bills which are going through Parliament. One of which has been really prophylic, which is the police courts and sentencing bill. Mm-hmm. And so now that the movement that like rallied against this, Kill the Bill, is now transferring from like active sort of citizens like going against it to like now they're like, okay, well, it's passed now. Now we need to deal with the consequences of that. And so this is just as much activism. Now they're like thinking about how can we build community resilience, to these like draconian police powers which are being put in place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like really important to recognize that, you wouldn't even have activism, I don't think, if you had that sort of these like communities and like support networks in place. Because yeah, that's the sort of thing like people will see like, oh, This is unjust. This is against me. How can I, you know, like go against this, or like at least help people who are being affected by whatever issue it is. Mm-hmm. And there's groups already there, and that's just as much a part of activism. Mm-hmm.
Wait. So, question.
Yeah.
Are you saying like that we necessarily wouldn't have activism if we did have the support groups kind of already integrated into the system?
Not necessarily there wouldn't be, but I think, it would be a lot harder to be an activist, if they weren't there.
Yeah.
I think like that is part of activism as well, in my opinion. Like, that's what we're trying to do, defining activism. But I think it's such a broad concept that you cannot pin it down and say the radicals, the leftists. Yeah. It's not true, because you've seen Tory doctors being arrested for the climate crisis in the middle of the street. People with completely different backgrounds and perspectives, religions, color, political ideas, it doesn't matter. Like the climate crisis and many other that are intersected with it. But the climate crisis is the one that shows that, you know, we're all in this together. I mean, the pandemic is another one that shows that.
Yeah.
But so I think that, you know, whether you put up a stand, supporting welcoming refugees or something, or whether you provide a table for the stand, or whether you provide the car to go to the stand, or like we were at a protest in Glasgow in the Pollock Shields neighborhood 2 weeks ago against the Nationality and Borders Bill, one of the draconian bills that Lewis was mentioning before. And there was an old lady there that at the end made a quick speech, and they introduced her as the main organizer. An old lady, she was over 70s, and she just said, well, I was listening to the news and they said that, you know, they were going to do this. And I've been living here for like the past 20 years and I had no problems. These are my neighborhood, my neighbors, and they're going to attack my neighborhood and I got to defend myself. Mm-hmm. So I thought, why is no one doing anything? And I started sending emails out. And I looked for the groups, the social group, the corporations, mm-hmm. the cooperatives, the community centers and so on. And we put on this protest. And the week after, they marched from their neighborhood to George Square. And it was beautiful. And then they inaugurated a new bench in George Square. So, like, all of this can have, like, a domino fall to other people. You can just, like, do your part. And then you'll see that people will follow. Because mm-hmm. there are people out there that are thinking exactly the same thing you're thinking right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah. And I there's two things I want to hit. One is we always come back to that human element, right? So yep. it's always a human element in that story mm. that basically kind of reignites a whole group to come together. But then I feel like on the other, so my other point would be, so in the US, you guys all know, we have a lot of Nazis and fascists, and they're the ones that are now primarily doing the activist things. They're the ones out there marching. They're the ones holding rallies. They're the ones trying to... and so, like, I always get into, I don't know, like, I always say, like, activism, like, all activism is good, but then I have to stop myself and be like, maybe
or
not.
Is it really?
Mm. But at the same time, it's, like, the moral understanding of what you're doing, I guess, like, how can I say, like, what I'm fighting for is right, but then not fully acknowledge that they also feel suppressed in what they're fighting for is because
exactly.
they have similar feelings that I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Just a whole different stance on it.
Yeah. Just, it's the understanding of, is it beneficial? Like you said, you know,
yeah.
am I making an impact or are they making the biggest impact? And I also feel like, yes, our views, you know, how I remember the Black Lives Matter movement. We were on Wilma Rudolph. And we had, yeah, it's flashback. We had our side, you know, we're screaming Black Lives Matter. And then you had on the other side, All Lives Matter kind of individuals mm-hmm. or Blue Lives Matter individuals.
Yeah.
And just
Trump flags.
Just going by the flags that were just like outland, the Confederate flags mm-hmm. that just kept on. And you're thinking to yourself, as they will always in America say to you, freedom of speech.
at the same time,
it's like, but for who? You know, you ask the question, who is this line for? So I can definitely get
yeah.
that question of like.
So I think this is where, not necessarily public perception, but like the media's perception of like what is like acceptable as an activist comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there's like, I can't remember who heard this from. But the fact that in terms of national security, activists are ranked just below terrorists. And this is alluded, brought in earlier. And I think, I'm probably getting this wrong, but when I'm thinking about America, I think about these sort of, again, parenthesis, like activists covering things like All Lives Matter or, you know, like Proud Boys or whatever, who seem to get away with a lot more. And I think that's because, you know, they're not threatening the status quo. I think that's like possibly where, for me, activism lies. It's like threatening the status quo, in a way that makes society more like acceptable and bearable for a larger proportion of people.
Quite interesting point on that. I completely agree with what you said. I think it's really true, but it could be said that, you know, people believe like the conspiracy theorists in the US believing in the deep state and all that bullshit. Mm-hmm. Just to fact check. I mean, they could claim, like, you know, they could claim they're disrupting the status quo because they are going against Hillary Clinton, Biden, and and all the, you know. So in that sense, that could be recognized in that. I think this is like a much broader topic, to be fair, because so many factors come in, such as the technological revolution, which definitely should be included in this conversation, in the sense that since, you know, the technological revolution, we've had this platform to amplify voices, amplify stories that we were saying before. The problem with that is also that freedom of speech and freedom of expressions comes very easily when you have Twitter or Instagram or Facebook in front of you. So it just becomes a kind of like ranting about. So maybe we should go back and kind of rethink the idea of freedom of expression, and not, it's not about the freedom of saying the shit you want and just like say the whatever slurs to people and so on. And so maybe we should get back that concept, kind of redefine it, and then talk about it, because I also get very frustrated every time it brings up the freedom of speech, and I respect it fully, as you were saying before. Like, we need to, like, if they feel oppressed, if they are concerned this way and they go out in the streets, there clearly is a problem. Mm-hmm. There clearly needs to be addressed. And I understand with that. But the source of that, all these conspiracy theories, QAnon and deep state, that's just untrue. Mm-hmm. And it's just ignorance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's furthermore perpetuated by the media, as Lewis was saying. I think they have a huge role.
Well, okay, so I was going to hop in, like, two things.
This is, yeah.
I really, really, really like the status quo as being, like, kind of, not a prereq, but part of, like, what makes you an activism is you're challenging the status quo. Because I feel like no matter what side of the pole you're on, that's always kind of what you're doing. And I like that you specifically pointed out that they're not really challenging the status quo so they can get away with more, specifically in America. And I think that's so true, because you do see that how they're treated by police, how they're treated in the courts and their sentences, that is completely different than the people that are challenging that system, right? But then to hit on what Ludo said, I think when we talk about reframing, you know, like freedom of speech, you can say whatever the fuck you want, that's fine, but it's, you have to deal with those consequences of your actions and your words. And I feel like that portion is the part that people always forget. It's like, nobody's stopping you and telling you to shut up. Nobody's doing that. You can say whatever you want. But it's like, at the same time, if people are going to hate on you on the internet, if you're going to get in trouble at work, if, you know, people are going to call you out for something, if it's a hate crime and all of a sudden you're like, why am I getting this done? Like, you can't act surprised. Like, these are the consequences of your actions.
Yeah. Completely agree. I mean, there is a huge example of that, and that's the insurrection with the Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, he spites shit on everyone at all times. And then when consequences come up and, you know, he does not want to be held accountable for that. So then that's a bit too easy, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Especially when you, you know,
create
insurrection, basically.
Exactly. And I remember, because the conversation was surrounded, like, there was literally Black Lives Matter protests happening and we couldn't even make it that far. Like, there was no way we'd even get on the lawn, and all of a sudden, like, these people are barely getting, like, very little sentences. I think the shaman only got, like, what, 5 years out of everything, and he just became, like, the poster kid for this whole movement. And so, yeah, no, I think it's super annoying. I'll rant about it, but I'm not doing that now.
I mean, I think, like, at the end of the day, it's like, oh, yeah, freedom of speech, but only for me. Like, I mean, as in, like, not, that's not what I'm saying. That's kind of like, yeah, it's like not thinking that, okay, I have freedom of speech, but then, okay, so does everyone else. And yeah, I need to deal with the fact that if I say something that's bigoted and wrong, then I'm going to get called out for it. And yeah, you might end up with a court date.
A lot of the times, you know, when people said their ignorance online or in person, they get it from, like, all these medias, like you were saying, instead of actually taking the time, like you guys said, to look it up, you know, like they tell you in school to actually cite your sources, like give me the form of where this is coming from. Whereas they're quick to listen to what they feel is right, mm-hmm. I feel like, and then go with it.
Yeah, but I also feel like it's important to note that, like, your data is always being watched. And so the cookies and everything, that adjusts, like, what you do. So, like, let's say I'm already into conspiracy theories and I'm going to look it up. Mm-hmm. Google's going to show me everything that I already agree with because it knows. Mm-hmm. So, it's one of those things. I feel like, yeah, you do have to teach people to critically think, but also bringing in, like, the whole technology of it. Like, it's just mm-hmm. so difficult.
I mean, it's been shown that they've used this innovation in technology to target, like, voters and people through social media and then sway them to vote this rather than that. Mm-hmm. So how hard is it to find those Trump supporters that are down for him as if, because it's a cult, that's what it is. Whatever he does, he's in the right now. They have no critical sense whatsoever. And they find those on the internet and then they just feed them the news that they want them to feed. And that's just the way conspiracy theories keep being upheld. And that's why in the future, this is a huge issue that needs to be addressed, which is how do we control the media? How is the media? Is the media free, first of all? Which is not, neither in the UK nor in the US. And then if we are, how do we, you know, regulate fake news? How do we fact check who does that? Are they going to be independent? Are they going to be truly independent? Mm. Or are they going to be independent like the governments run this independent investigation of theirs?
This brings in, so like old sort of news, like print and like television, these things, like, I mean, sure, there's a lot of bullshit that gets said on it, like, think Fox News, but like they are meant to be independently regulated, mm-hmm. so there is some degree of like transparency and like truth there, mm-hmm. But like news, like social media things, Facebook, Instagram, they're like actively polarizing tools. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've seen the social network, you'll know this. Because they get more clicks, they get more money, more time spent if people are of like a more extremist view on anything. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like one of the real reasons that we're finding it difficult to connect with people. There's like this. Seems to be this increasing polarization between whether it's like leftists and right extremists, or Republican and Democrat, or whatever it is, and it's being fueled by this thing. And like, so how do we bring in this regulation mm-hmm. into a sphere where there's so much data going around that you can't do that, you know?
Yeah, and I think, okay, so, and I agree with everything you guys are saying, but then also bringing in, like, another element is we're all from countries that are democracies. We're all from countries that are, like, you know, global north, right? So, like, we are coming from areas where we don't necessarily have to worry about just any of the stuff that the global south really has to worry about. But, like, so how do you think that plays into our privilege that we can actually sit down and have this kind of conversation and talk about activism? Because I feel like, as we saw at COP, there's a lot of activists that aren't in the Amazon rainforest. There's a lot of activists that are in Africa that are fighting for their resources and stuff like that. But, like, they don't necessarily get heard until they get brought up to our level. Mm. Does that make sense? And so, like, how do you think privilege plays into activism in general, whether it be in your own life or just kind of the circles that you're in? And do you recognize it, I guess?
Yeah, so for me, that was one of the main things that brought me to entering this process as well. Like, once you realize this division, this inequality that exists, this divide, because that's what it is. It's a divide between global north and global south. And the pandemic has just highlighted that at its apex. I personally just couldn't walk away. I just couldn't turn around. And I just thought, I just need to live my life. And I need to pay back for the privilege I was given. Mm. Because the reality is, our privilege is based on the geographical position we're born in. Mm-hmm. And that's not given by anyone, by God, by whatever you fucking believe in. It's not given by anything. And so that's just something that needs to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. You're rich, you're poor, you live in North America, or you're living in South Africa, or you're living in Yemen. Unfortunately, it was just down to faith. It was just down, not faith, that was actually the wrong, but it was just down to arbitrary decision, and that needs to be acknowledged. And I think that everything after that for me was just like realizing how big my privilege is and just doing something with it. I was just like, to live with myself and know that, you know, I am worth going to uni, and I want to do the max, and I want to do the best I can do, and use the full potential of my life like everyone else should do in their lifetime. But you need to acknowledge the fact that you were just given so much better platform to do it. I was given loving parents. I was given a loving family. I was given money to survive. I did not have to struggle for a roof over my head or for education. I could go and study in another country for free because I'm white and European. And those are just facts. Mm-hmm. So that just can't be neglected. And yeah.
Definitely. No. I will reiterate everything Ludo just said. Besides the white and European, even just being a Black American, yes, we have our, like, you know, like we were saying, Black Lives Matter and our I guess problems, but I didn't realize how privileged I was until I got over here late in a game. But I know that I am privileged, and the fact that I have been taught that, yes, I do have loving parents, I do at least have a roof over my head, I do get health, some sort of health care, whether in America, I mean, I would rather get it here in the UK, but I know that I'm getting health care, whether it's other, like you said, countries who can't even get a simple, you know, a testing. Mm. And so I think because of me getting into activism, I didn't understand that, you know, I was just still stuck up. Mm-hmm. Or oblivious and ignorant to, honestly, what was outside of America. And I'm very, very, very grateful in the opportunity. And I'm also privileged to be able to move from America. still we're in this pandemic. Mm-hmm. From the pandemic to a UK and have the opportunity to study at a UK school. Mm-hmm. Where there's so many who is trying to just get a good education. Mm-hmm. So I think recognizing privilege even as a minority, even mm-hmm. as a Black American, because I we're selfish. I'm definitely selfish in a way of like, there's a lot of times where I just think about me, you know, oh, this is what's happening to me, oh, this isn't fair. But there isn't a lot of times where I'm like, well, damn, that person doesn't have anything. Mm. So, and not saying that what's going on in my life shouldn't be, you know, an opportunity of me to, like, rethink myself and, you know, put yourself first. But at the same time, you need to kind of put yourself in other people's shoes. Mm-hmm. And some people don't even have shoes, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Fair point.
You know? And so there's just so many things you don't think about until you're out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even to get to say that I'm privileged, whoa. I don't know.
No, I agree with what's said before as well. I mean, I think I'm probably, like, on like a global scale, I'm probably one of the most privileged people. Like, I have dual nationality. I'm white. I'm a guy. I'm cis. Yeah. So I'm like way up there with like my privilege. But yeah, I'm from Global North as well. So I think something that's like really important to like acknowledge though is, so there's all these people, there's like, oh, there's millions of people live in the Global North who like in sort of, what's the word, in relation to like people in the Global South have got so much more privilege. But then if they've got all this privilege, then how come they're not using that? And I think there's something that comes in there, like, Sure, they've got privilege, but there's like massive problems with poverty in still in the States and in the UK, and probably I don't know, I'm picking numbers out of the air here, but I'd say at least like 30% of people in the UK like don't have time to think of anything other than getting food on the table and like a roof over their head. And the rest. Who aren't involved in activism are either not, they don't have anything at that particular point which is like impinging on their like ability to survive day to day, or are in this sort of like comfortable area where they're not being sort of impacted enough that it's too bad to like bear, but being given enough that they're just sort of comfortable with the, with where they are.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that, because like I think just hitting on everything you guys said, I think there's a thing where you have to recognize you have privilege, and I think a lot of people in the global north, when you talk to them, they don't want to recognize it because of those issues that you said, because we're still struggling with like poverty, education, healthcare, race issues and discrimination. So it's just like, I think for them, there's just all this like injustice in their own little circle. How can they look outside of that to realize that they have privilege, that they're able to talk about these things and can possibly make a change in them if they were to like get into activism? Whereas we have to realize that's the privilege part, is that you can do these things freely, whereas in the global south, they don't. And I feel like it's just getting people to recognize that that is a part of that privilege, that you won't ever see people get pushed enough to care outside of their own, like, city or, like, region or anything like that.
Yeah, at this point, I think, I feel like it's very important to kind of talk about the main source of this, which is our, you know, economical and political system. Economical system. And, I mean, I think that is what plays the disillusionment part in the people like in the UK, in the global north, that are still struggling under this capitalist system, and they hear these people telling them that they're privileged, and they say, man, I'm living through the cost of living crisis, energy prices are going up, I have no food for my kids, I gotta choose between eating and heating, and they gotta tell me I'm privileged? Like, fuck these people, fuck these privileged people that can actually, that you know, they're privileged enough to say this and even think this. For those people that are listening out there, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is you're being oppressed by this system, and you just need to recognize that and keep it in mind. It doesn't necessarily entail that you're having a great life, but it does entail that you had a completely different life from the global south. That's just a fact. And that was just because you were born in the UK, not because you had some sort of divine blood or blue blood or whatever, or divine right. It just happened. So be lucky and keep it in mind, because that might actually help you get through your day, get through your tasks. And it might even give you a sense of a relief at the end of the day. And it might eventually ignite that passion that brought us all out here to say, well, this is not okay. There is a huge divide in the world. It's clearly brought about by the system we're living in, and we should do something about it. And it's no one's fault, because again, it's an arbitrary decision where you're born, but you should acknowledge, and you should acknowledge it, and you should do something about it.
I think you just tapped into something really important there. In that, you know, like if people in the like the privileged global north, if so many people there are having like massive problems with just living day to day, and you know, like the reason that they can only just get by is because of like massive exploitation of like most of the rest of the world, so that we can only just get by, like, you know, like there wouldn't even be like a justification for it if we were living, we were all living comfortably. But we're not. We're only like, we're all like,
so
we're only like just getting by. And that's like because of the exploitation of, yeah, most of the rest of the world who are like suffering. Well, not, they're not all like dying and like burning or whatever. But you know, they're being exploited to like a horrific extent for us, yeah, just to be able to live day to day. And I think that's like one of the best ways to highlight how fucked our like political and social economic system is, because
I challenge anyone to not agree with the statement that we're living in the global north, at least we're living in a place, well, worldwide, where it's socialism for the rich and mm-hmm. austerity for the poor, or capitalism for the poor. That's how it works, because the few gets by pretty well, and the 99.9%. So, like, mm-hmm. come on, guys. mm-hmm. Let's fucking change this shit.
As soon as you were saying that, I just have, like, Bernie Sanders in my head. You guys can't see what I'm doing, but this hand motions, if you know, you know. But no, I feel like that's such an important thing to hit on. And it's just, it's fucking sad. It's fucking sad.
It's overwhelming.
It is.
It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And
burn
then.
All down.
Yeah,
I mean, we're about to.
But this is why, again, it's a gradual process, because mm-hmm. it is overwhelming. It is this, like, it mm-hmm. is frustrating, and most like, we've all had terrible days where we were like, I'm done with this. I'm never going in the streets again. Fuck this shit. And you know, I just want to binge watch Netflix for mm-hmm. the rest of my life and eat sweets and die yeah. of diabetes. You know,
and, in my bed.
Yeah, exactly. Like. Fair enough. You can get those days too. You shouldn't feel bad about yeah. that. That's just normal. You have good days and bad days. But, you know, after that, you do that for a couple of days, 3 days, even a week if you want to, and if you have the time. And then you pick yourself up, because that's what we do as human beings. We pick ourselves up and we realize, well, I have to do something about it, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to exist or survive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And honestly, just to hit on your statement before, like, if there wasn't really socialism for the rich, and I don't know what you said, but I just was thinking.
Yeah.
Play the tape back.
But, like, if that wasn't true, then why is everybody striving to be rich? Because every time you talk to somebody that was poor.
Because money runs
anything,
the world.
Because money runs the world.
That is what's getting.
And because you know you'd be comfortable. You know you wouldn't have to worry about anything. You're like, if I just had the money. People are willing to give up love for money. You know how we have that conversation?
I was just about to say, you know, the money corrupts, kind of. Or
period.
Recent.
Period.
Like, if you say, you guys do the lottery here.
Not personally, but yeah.
Not personally, but. So, like, say you do the lottery, back home, and you win the jackpot, right? Mm. Like, the first question is, like, what are you going to do with that money? And then as you gradually go on, like, is your views going to change? Mm-hmm. Are you going to mm-hmm. be more, not more, but, like, continue to be, oh, it's me?
No, I'm going to go look back a little bit. So Ludo earlier was talking about stories. Mm. And I think this is one of the things where we've like, really missed out. So I'm paraphrasing from George Monbiot. And I can't find, maybe we can get it in the show notes. There's this fantastic podcast that, our talk that George Monbiot put together. And it's about, I mean, like, I think most people at their core know that the system is fucked.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no, like, sort of, like, alternate story, that we can go with. Like, our story at the moment is, like, neoliberal capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like... We've been told, like, that's the story, and I think I'm getting it wrong, but it's something like the story that runs through society over, like, a long time is, like, there is a big problem, little man goes against the problem,
David and Goliath.
Yeah, it's the David and Goliath story. And at one point, it was sort of like Keynesian economics, which kind of like took on that role and was adopted on a global scale. And this time, it was neoliberalism. And when neoliberalism broke in the financial crisis in 2008, there wasn't anything to take on that role. And so we've kind of ended up with a system which is sort of like dragging itself half dead. Mm-hmm. Just carrying on, like, barely, but there's nothing to replace it. And so I think we need to think about, what our new story is.
So is that going to be the millennial and Gen Z's thing? It's like, we're going to create this whole new system and story and set these, like, roadblocks for other people to prosper after us.
Yeah. I think that we should definitely put the podcast in notes, because, like, this podcast
really
is insane.
Podcast. I remember as you were explaining it, I was like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Louis suggested it to all of us, and I had listened to it as well. And I think that is key point. We need to change the narrative. There needs to be an alternative that replaces neoliberalism. And as of now, we don't have a convincing one enough. Mm. And we just keep going with this rotten system because just a few have enough power and money to keep it running. Mm-hmm. But one thing I want to touch on what Louis said is that, as he was saying, most people are aware that the system is broken. Mm-hmm. But the majority of people also are not aware of the fact that the system was made to be broken.
Yeah.
It was never envisioned to work. Mm-hmm. It was thought to work for the few and not to work for the many. And that's exactly what it's doing. Mm-hmm. That's exactly why, as soon as the 99% realizes that, there is no future for that. And I think we're living in that period, because the Global South is getting their voices amplified, and they had figured this out many years ago. But obviously, we don't take advices from them because we know better. As usual. And clearly the pandemic shows that, because we know better, because we've bought 4 times the doses we needed for our own population. And that turned out to beat us in our ass, because the pandemic is global. The virus does not look in the face of borders or race. And at the end of the day, another variant came back. It came into Europe. It came into the UK. It killed thousands of people. And at the end of the day, vaccine nationalism did not save us. So again, when all of us figured the shit out, we can unite and maybe change this goddamn narrative. Mm-hmm. I'm down for it, and I think all of you guys are. So,
for like, what is the point in a few short sentences?
What's the point? Few short sentences.
Yes, it's like, what do you think is the point of getting out there, being an activist in whatever form or what was it, the stepping stone of what you think the activist is, and like, what is the point of like just doing it?
So my take on that is, why am I doing it, is both because of a moral duty to just like, again, acknowledge my privilege and do something about it. And on the other side, there is also that selfish factor that is, I could not sleep at night unless I knew that I had done my part. And I think that what we have, GJS, is like a start. This podcast is a start. Reading some of the books in my library is a start. I know I have a long road to go, but I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that I'm doing somewhat my part. You can always do more. You can always do less. But at the end of the day, I feel like if it's good enough for you, if you feel like you're part of the movement, if you feel like you're helping the world go in the right direction, you're good. And that is where it's up to me, other than obviously a moral imperative, because it's just right to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why? I guess.
What's the point?
I think one of the big things is like, we can. We have the ability to. There's so many horrific problems around the world. And I feel like if I didn't do something, I'd be completely paralyzed by that. And like the act of, no matter how small it is, the act of doing something allows me to sort of carry on doing the normal things.
It gives you a purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, so I believe it was elementary school when they would, you know, tell you all the stories, read all the stories to you, reminding that to be a human being meant to have a purpose in life. You know, this is one of the massive, massive questions that they ask humans, right? Why are you on Earth? What's your purpose? What's your story? Why do you live? Why do you exist? If you exist to work, does it even, is it worth existing in that sense? So again, to me, it gives me that sort of purpose that is like, I'm here to do something that is bigger than having a job or going to school. I mean, both things I've just mentioned are obviously hugely important, but to have a purpose beyond that, have a purpose that really connects you to the earth, the planet, and the people living on that planet is very important. And again, it gives you that sort of community identity that I very much belong to.
It's
like a world community.
You feel connected more to the things that matter. And like a lot of the time, at the end of the day, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, I think we should remember that. Like, one of my favorite, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Partying is anti-capitalist. that's just kind of a side note. But generally, like, we need to, also remember that it's not, being an activist isn't depressing. Like, it can be. Like, when you put loads of effort into something and nothing comes out of it. But yeah, it is also fun. It's rewarding when a campaign wins, like recently with the 2E campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Puts a smile on your face. Okay. Well, thank you so much, guys, for coming on to our podcast. I don't know about y'all, but this is definitely a reason why we asked these two to come onto our podcast, because they just have so much
good
to give.
And
they're so young.
Oh, they are so young.
That's you guys, though. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks so much for bringing some life into GJS.
I remember at the Climate Festival, at the Global South speaker event, seeing you guys sitting there and being like, we need these people. And when you came up at the end and you were like, so like, who's organizing this? Can we like get involved?
I think it was I remember talking to you first with at your grandmother's
Convention Save the Planet.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, it was, because I was just like, hey, I need to like downsize on my jeans. But and then as I was going to more of you guys' events and workshops, I was like, we need to know more about these people. Like, this is interesting. Yeah. Like, I cannot know you guys. So I'm really grateful that we took the time and like said something.
Yeah, and honestly, coming from the US, like, both of us, I mean, we knew each other, so there's like a little bit of like cushion, but it's like creating your own identity and space in a whole different country. And
yeah,
I think
that's hard.
It's hard, but I feel like activism is such a good place to meet good people and to do that, because you get presented with so many opportunities and stuff, and it is just like soul fulfilling in general.
Yeah. But if you definitely wanted to know more about Ludo and Lewis, definitely follow them on their social media page. Ludo, I'm not gonna mess up your full name, so you say it.
Yeah, I actually wanted to plug in as well, since we were talking about the Sterling Climate Festival. Check the Sterling Climate Festival out. They have social media, there is a website, and there is the possibility of a new Sterling Climate Festival.
2023?
April.
April.
Take notes.
But
that means you come to the UK for good times.
Anyway, sounds fun. But also follow Global Justice Sterling on Instagram. We'll put all this in the show notes, because there's a lot of Instagrams that you can follow for really good information. And, you know, just to follow these two guys as they do a bunch of shit, because they do a lot of shit.
But definitely follow us on Melanin Speaking Podcast. And if you want to get in contact or have a little bit of a feedback, email us at melaninspeaking4@gmail.com. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
Bye.
Y'all are cute. Oh.